Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Still to come, Republican Party Chairman for Baldwin County down here, Patrick McWilliams, joining us here at the Faro Bureau. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. As always, your text, 251-340-106. We'll get to those in due course. I still got a bunch to get to here. I see them up on the screen, but we will have time at the top of the next hour to wade through those, some serious, some not so serious, but either way, I do appreciate the feedback. Joining us now on the line, my talk show brethren from North Alabama, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams on the line with the Senator. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, my brother. How you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thank you for making time. We always appreciate it. You and I and some guy named Dale Jackson, I guess you found him on the street somewhere or whatever, but we do a segment every week. And my takeaway yesterday, I wanted to talk about redistricting and some people think it's no big deal. You and I seem to be on the same page, at least on this, that why it happened earlier this week in that federal courtroom, not a good showing for Alabama, at least not a good showing for the legislature.
No, that was a classic case of trying to make a clown show look like a serious business. And it was, I tell you, the guy who gets under my skin the most in this, who did the most harm, in my opinion, is Representative Chris Pringle from Baldwin County, I guess, South Alabama.
Mobile.
Mobile. I look at his testimony. I think, what a jackleg thing to say. If you're trying to present the fact that the Republicans who have the majority were presenting what they thought was their best effort, then you don't go in and say, well, mine would have been better, and then throw your Senate colleagues under the bus because you feel like you didn't get your way. All that did was look like there was no congruity, there was no leadership, and that there was no, intimate knowledge of what was best. It was just a matter of, Senate and House didn't agree, and next thing you know, we had the worst one. Well, that's exactly the way to undermine your own case. And I think Pringle did us a great disservice.
Well, and he voted for it. That's what's befuddling to me, right? I watched a little bit of it. A lot of it went on while I was on the air. But at some point, it appeared that Pringle had decided that he was going to. He got. Remember, he had the Chris Brown weird thing that he was saying. Someone else, a consultant, drew the maps and whatever. But he ultimately went along with it. He could have said no and fought it, but I don't know. The pressure got to him, but that's just the thing. Like, if it's so bad, then why did you vote for it?
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you what else is missing here, too, man. And I recognize that they've tried to circle the wagons a bit, and none of them are talking about it because it's an active litigation. I get that. But what should have happened in the background is the Senate pro tem and the Speaker of the House should have gotten everybody together and said, there is going to be one sheet of music that we're going to sing from, and this is it. Get happy with the bill that we decide. Everybody good? All right, let's go vote. Apparently that didn't happen, at least when you hear Pringle's testimony. It's been an awful debacle the way it's been put together.
Well, I mean, I get him testifying under oath. He's being truthful and that, but sure. the original sin was him going along with it in the first place. He should have fought it if he didn't think it was, if it was acceptable. And look, I know the clock was ticking, but you know something else, Senator? They could have started that special session long before they did, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes. In fact, if you get down to it, really, Governor Ivey did them no favors. She waited to the 11th hour and gave them the minimal amount of time to get it done. Maybe she was scared that if they had more time on their hands, they'd bring in other things she didn't want to deal with. Because according to Chris Pringle, again, there was a time when he was saying the only thing Governor Ivey wants to deal with is redistricting. No other extraneous matters will be considered before the legislature. That's really not – he's not – Is he Governor Ivey's assistant or is he a legislator? And so I look at this and think, yeah, Governor Ivey did him really no favors by calling that thing so late and getting in there with 5 days to work with. And that was pretty much it.
Well, let me ask you from the other side of the equation, your legal analysis, but like, is it possible that they had gotten some bad advice from the AG that they thought that they, I mean, maybe it's not bad advice in the end, but at least at this stage, that it wasn't going to, it was, maybe it was predetermined to go this way. They knew it was going to go this way in that in front of that three-judge panel, and they really are playing for the Supreme Court. I mean, doesn't it seem risky to you?
It's risky, but then, you know, policy can sometimes be risky. But let me ask you this, though. I don't know, Jeff, and I'm asking just because maybe you know something I don't know. Did the AG truly give them that advice? Do we know that for a fact, or is that just speculation? What do you know about that?
I mean, there seems to be a lot of indication, especially from the testimony that the AG leaned in on this, that the AG thought that or maybe it's Eddie LaCour or whoever it may be, but somebody within that realm said, hey, you got a shot to get this flip back the other way. Go this direction.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, the buck stops at the Alabama legislature. But do you think that if they did get that advice, well, let's not even pretend the AG was a part of it. Just do you think that was a good way to go, thinking that you would get back to the Supreme Court?
Okay, so here's the way I guess I would respond to that. If I were the AG, if I were in Steve Marshall's shoes, I don't pass legislation. I don't draft maps. I argue fine points of law, and I look at things from the standpoint that I'm also the chair of the Republican Attorney General's Association that sees a thing that happened in SCOTUS that has impacts that run nationwide, and other AGs are calling on me to try and get this thing unwound. I would say, look, fellas, if we get a chance, I'm going to try and push this back to SCOTUS. If the special master gets involved and we don't like it, I am definitely going to appeal this, and that may wind up being to our benefit. I would have said that. I would have given that advice. But then again, I'm not saying that he should try to be a legislator because he wasn't. He's being an attorney general, and as an attorney general, that's the viewpoint that I believe he would take. I would take it.
Yeah,
you'll go argue that thing and try to unwind it.
Yeah, because this could have repercussions, not just Alabama, but nationally.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just now at the congressional stage. What does this look like at the state legislative stage? I mean, there's a lot of different things that will be determined from this outcome, right?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's got nationwide impact. It's not just – it's a big deal for Alabama. It's a big deal for the nation, actually. And I think you're right. I think it has trickle-down effects into every manner of redistricting for everything that has to get redistricted everywhere.
Joined by State Senator Phil Williams, our former State Senator Phil Williams, now the host of Right Side Radio here on the program. But I think this is going to wind up special master, and the lines aren't going to be – they're going to draw some kind of opportunity district. What I guess remains to be seen is just, Senator, I think if they try to do two minority-majority districts, they're going to get, when election comes, the Democrats are going to get beat potentially on both of them. Maybe that's the play here, that the legislature doesn't take the fall, that the, you know, it's just the federal courts have to take the responsibility here.
Yeah, and I look at this and I think, man, we got to... What a huge issue here. States' rights. Does the Voting Rights Act of 1965 still apply? How much oversight do we have to have from the federal government? And then at the same time, I also look at it and think, my gosh, they've had almost the same district lines, roughly speaking, since 1992. How disingenuous to now say it's all bad. I think that they may have bitten off more than they can chew with this case. They think they got a win right now, but I bet Terry Sewell is a little bit apoplectic about the fact that she now has a district that is less of what she wanted. And you know what? She asked for it.
Well, and you think about this, when we do 2024, it'll be a Trump wave, right? It's going to be, at least in Alabama, it'll be a Trump wave. And then you take that on top of there being no Democratic Party infrastructure whatsoever. I mean, Joe Reed has just, it's a shell of anything, what it used to be. But there's no Democratic Party infrastructure. Right now, if you're handicapping this and they do draw these lines in a certain way, it is hard. I mean, at least maybe they keep one, but it's hard for me to see Democrats getting two seats out of this situation.
No, I can't argue with that. I mean, I think you're more astute at viewing political things like that than I am, and I agree with you. I think that that what we're looking at here is the possibility that we could wind up with 7 members of the congressional delegation from Alabama being Republican. And, like I said, I think they bit off more than they could chew.
Well, I am curious to see how that's going to go. I guess coming out of this, you're a little disheartened, or we're a little disheartened at the legislature. They didn't really have this outcome, and it played out in court the way it did. And you know what? You see, all you need to see here is Kyle Whitmire and Josh Moon and that crowd doing these victory laps and high-fiving each other after this testimony, after this latest round in the federal courtroom, and that tells you what you need to know.
Yeah, and that's true, and I go back to what I said earlier. I think this was a leadership issue, and I include Chris Pringle in that because he was the House chair for redistricting. But between the Senate pro tem, the Speaker of the House, the Governor's office, and the chairs of the redistricting committees, House and Senate, they really didn't act like a team. They all went in it like a bunch of individuals. Then they voted for it. Then they complained about it. And I'd look at this and think, man, y'all have got to get your act together.
Well, that's just a bad legal strategy from the get-go. Let's real quick, yep, while the time remaining here. Gambling. I had Sarah Albritton on the show earlier this week. It's the same argument it always is, but we have this ought to make us all feel better. We have another blue ribbon committee made up of House members that's studying this, another study committee. I guess if it's going to happen, it's got to come out of the House. But what I think it's really got to happen is Kay Ivey's got to be the one kind of leading the charge here, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's amazing is we're not seeing her leading charges. We're seeing her drop hints, and that's not what we need. We need her to establish her firm position on what she will sign, what she will try to veto. And truthfully, you know, the gambling issue, it they can't go at it like they did before and try to claim the mantle of conservatism. If you want gambling in this state, it's like marijuana. If you want marijuana in this state, then don't build government, raise taxes, and violate civil liberties to do it, which is what they've done. And the same thing they were trying to do with the last gambling bill they had was a monopolization by the same people who have been breaking our laws for years. Why would you do that? And so I look at this and think, yeah, Kay Ivey's got to get on, some pony and ride it, and let the world know where she stands. But then at the same time, you've also got to have a legislature that remembers where they came from and try to act like Republicans when they pass the law.
I mean, you were way out ahead on this marijuana stuff. I remember listening to the old 1819 podcast back in the day when you were doing it, and you did a whole show about this bureaucracy and what's coming and all the powers and the expansion of government that are coming along with it. And I guess it shouldn't surprise us that it's been a struggle to date. But the gambling analogy is so appropriate here because this is what you're going to get. You're going to get this slow-moving, slothful bureaucracy when the state tries to do gambling the way they're going to do it. It's going to be a slow roll. It's going to be frustrating. And this is the way government operates.
Yeah, and here's what I would just plead with my, you know, brethren and sistren that I used to serve with and all the new ones who are there since then in the legislature. Go look at your Republican Party platform. You have an R by your name. Go look at your Republican Party platform. And then when the bill comes before you, first measure it against the principles of your own party's platform and decide if the bill does those things. I'm not even talking about gambling. I don't care if it was the let's build a library bill. If it violates the principles you say you ran on, then either modify the bill or vote no. But if you want gambling, there's a way to do that without having to go through all the machinations of acting like Democrats. And I just look forward to seeing what they do. I think they get in the bubble down there, man, and they just forget who they are.
Well, and some of them aren't really, they don't really run on anything. They're unopposed. It's not like they go give a stump speech about these conservative ideals. It's just at some point, and I don't know if we'll see it even in our lifetime, Senator, but there's got to be sort of this populist revolt where, you know, you get like a big Jim Folsom or some figure like that leading the charge that really wants to. People got to get invested in state politics, but it's hard. One party rule and Republican turnout in primaries like in 20% in the high teens. That just that allows a small group of people, I think, very well placed, very astute, either the Chamber of Commerce types, country club types, to run the Republican Party, and this is what you get.
I said on my show most recently, and it kind of goes back to your comments earlier about the Democrat Party in Alabama being in complete disarray, is you play up to your competition. And when you don't have any competition, you get soft and you get flaccid and your muscles atrophy. Well, that's where we are right now. There's no reason for Republicans to have to be truly conservative because there's nobody there challenging them to look like what they say they are. So they can do whatever and nobody challenges. I mean, right now the Democrats, I don't want the Democrat Party to be strong, but at the same time, it would help if they at least had their act together and gave us something to have to fight against. And when you don't have a fight, you sit around like the old warrior who just tells old stories with no new battles.
Senator, we'll leave it there. I know you're very busy, but I do appreciate your time. I really do. And if folks want to find you online or anything else you're doing, how can they do so?
Well, first of all, thank you. I'll say it on your show. Thank you for hosting for me last week while I was on a family vacation. I appreciate you, brother. And, yeah, they can find us at rightsideradio.org every day, 2 to 5.
All right. Former State Senator Phil Williams, host of Right Side Radio there. We got to get a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Your jacket means to you what this hat means to me.